Chapter 33. Jack, 6. Jack Sansan Valano, truthless of Shinovar, delivered his captive as instructed. Avan had set aside a room for the girl, one without windows, guarded by 5 soldiers. Jack gave her to their care, watching as they closed and locked the door behind the red-haired youth.
"Why is this girl of such importance?" he wondered, lingering.
She was of good birth, but not that good. Perhaps it was her tie to the Lady Yasna Kolin. A tool for bargaining, perhaps? He left the palace behind, seeking out his master for the 2nd time in 1 night. Idiot king no longer, Avan now moved openly, wishing to be witnessed by as much of the Vaden nobility as possible. Jack found the man near the gates to Vaden City, standing in a ring of torches, looking out at the army which was still camped beyond. Jack approached, and the guards let him pass without comment.
"You found the girl?" Avan asked, turning toward Jack, watching his lips.
Still deaf? But he sounded so natural.
"Yes," Jack replied. "She was at the competition."
Avan nodded.
"And there was an attempt on the king's life?"
2 shardbearers, sent by Elokar's own Parshan," Jack said. "They were not successful."
"They were never intended to be," Avan said cryptically. "Alethkar will rise in civil war. It seems to be common these days."
Jack did not respond. There was much activity in the army camp, a strange parallel of the fervor that had struck Vaden City only hours before. Torches and lanterns scurried between the different sections of the army, and men stood alert, weapons drawn. Jack could hear the ringing of weapons in the background, and flame-lit smoke curled in the air from several groups of tents. This was still an enemy army, despite Avan's stunt in killing Talshech. Vaden City would still be captured, Avan killed. Slaying Talshech had done little but delay. What was Avan's plan?
"It's almost over," Avan said.
There was something odd to his tone. Jack realized that he had been wrong. Avan's accent wasn't gone. He still retained a noticeable flatness to his tone, but his words sounded mostly natural now, compared to what they had been like before. Someone who didn't know Avan was deaf might judge the slight oddity to be a personality quirk.
"How?"
Jack asked. Avan didn't notice the comment. Jack stepped up, drawing Avan's attention.
"How?" he repeated. "Your voice. How did you do it?"
"Speech coaches," Avan said absently. "They taught me to exaggerate the dullness of my words, then to sharpen their clarity. I wasn't completely deaf as a child. I remember some of what it is like to speak and hear. I'm told I don't sound perfect and likely never will, but it suits my purposes."
"How did you know you could kill Talshech?"
Jack asked.
"You knew from the ballads he chose? You knew he would be impetuous, and that you could defeat him in sword play?"
Avan smiled, looking back toward the tents.
"No," he said. "On that I gambled. The Vaden lords are tyrants and warriors. We play prettily by the words of Bajardin, but at our hearts we are despots. They would never accept a leader who could not defeat an opponent in battle."
"There will be other duels," Jack warned, "ones you cannot win. Your surprise is expended."
"I will appoint champions," Avan said. "One win is enough, for now. By the time this is all through, no one will even remember I won that duel by chance."
By chance? Jack shook his head, uncertain how to judge this man once called idiot.
"You only have 9 birds left," Jack said carefully.
Avan inhaled softly, his eyes flashing with rage, intolerance. It was gone so quickly that Jack missed it. The king turned from Jack, waving for the royal soldiers to move forward.
They did as commanded, carrying a collection of cloth and poles to the area just outside the city gates. A few minutes later, they had erected an open-sided pavilion, one inscribed with a massive glyph, the Kanaran symbol for peace.
"Who will you parley with?" Jack asked. "They still fight amongst themselves."
"It has been decided already," Arvin said. "Those who resist do so out of frustration, not out of hope." "You decided their new leader for them."
Jack paused.
"Me?"
Arvin nodded.
"Everyone with a more suitable claim is now dead. Come."
Jack followed, unconvinced. However, in accordance with Arvin's implication, a contingent of soldiers left the gathering of tents, marching forward to the parley tent. At their head was a middle-aged man Jack did not recognize. Arvin seated himself in a chair provided by one of his attendants, then nodded for the newcomer to take the opposite chair. The man did not sit. He was shorter and did not have the traditional look of a Vaden warrior. His features weren't hard enough, his eyes too keen with cleverness. His shard blade was not summoned, but two of his soldiers carried theirs openly.
"I do not see what we have to discuss," the man said.
"But you came to my tent anyway, Lord Ilhadal Davar," Arvin said. "That implies at least curiosity."
"I wished only to see you, and to hear your words with my own ears," Lord Ilhadal said. "I see the stories are true. It appears that our idiot made fools of us all. Some men do not take well to such mockery."
"Are you saying that you're completely surprised?" Arvin asked with amusement. "That you've never heard reports from your spies that the king might not be the fool he implied?"
Ilhadal did not reply.
"Come now, Ilhadal," Arvin said. "I know you. You are ambitious like Talshech. But you are not the impetuous buffoon your cousin was. You are patient and you are careful. You prefer a building subtlety to a sudden and obnoxious crescendo. You make plans for your future and make allegiances with skill."
Ilhadal snorted.
"What do you know of me, king?" he snapped. "We have never met nor spoken."
"You would be surprised," Arvin said. "But that is irrelevant. You can't afford to attack me now. Your army is grand, but it is barely under your control. Ours is a superstitious people, my lord. They may have given you their hesitant support, but they will break if you try to take the throne from one the Almighty obviously chose himself."
Ilhadal snorted again, but Jack could see concern in his eyes. Part of what Arvin had said, at least, was true.
"What do you propose, then?" Ilhadal said. "I have an army but no throne. You have a throne but no army. Instability aside, I think one of us is in a far better position."
"You have a daughter, do you not?" Arvin said offhandedly.
Ilhadal froze.
"What of Shinri?" he growled. "She is safe in Alethkar."
Arvin smiled, leaning forward.
"You misunderstand me, my lord. Consider this. You will never sit on the throne of the three houses."
Ilhadal's face darkened. Arvin raised a finger, speaking quietly.
"But your grandson might."
Ilhadal stood in silence. Then, slowly, he seated himself in the offered chair.
"Speak on." "I will need something in return for my good faith," Arvin said.
Ilhadal's mood darkened even further in the torchlight.
"I would think that your continued reign would be gift enough."
Arvin shook his head.
"I did not gather this armory to let it disperse unfulfilled. The Aleth king will soon go to war with his countrymen. Alethkar is already weakened from years of battle and from the need to keep a controlling force in Prala. The civil war will be quick, but it will be destructive. If a strong force were to move in and crush the last of their armies...
This gave Ilhadul pause.
They are our allies, Arvin, he noted. Then let us be civil and remove from them the burden of rule, Arvin replied. They obviously cannot maintain it themselves, though it was kind of them to capture Prala for us. Tell me, Ilhadul, why would you want to deliver your grandson one throne when you could give him three?
It will not be as easy as you imply, Ilhadul said. My holdings are to the north. The borders of Alethkar are always well patrolled. They will hear of our coming, and they will unite against us. Instead of preying on their squabbles, we will restore their monarchy.
Not if we don't go through the border, Arvin said.
See? Ilhadul asked.
It would take too long to gather the Lochinron navy.
Besides, Tethkanar would make the only suitable port, and it will be well defended, even in times of civil war.
We won't use the sea either, Arvin said.
What then? Ilhadul demanded.
The Oath Gates.
Ilhadul snorted.
Ridiculous! Even Elokar Kolin wouldn't be foolish enough to let an army through the Oath Gates. They need to be opened from both sides.
Getting through the Oath Gate is my concern, Arvin said. Your duty is to return to your men and secure hold of your forces. I will proclaim our allegiance. That should give you help.
Once you are finished there, fetch your wife. She has a right of decision to exercise.